huge news, years in the making, my brand new book that my publishers refuse to publish, Money Matrix. Beat the money system and build generational wealth. Understand the three main ways that the banks productize you and make money from you. You'll be able to turn that system against itself, build generational wealth and multiple streams of recurring income. It's all at moneymatrix.cash. And if you're quick, the first few hundred registrants and buyers will receive many special bonuses from me. The brand new Moneymaker Summit 3-day special event. Meet me at a champagne reception. Meet me at a multi-millionaire networking dinner. Go now, moneymatrix.cash. This is huge. This content was too hot for YouTube. It would get me banned. It is exclusive here. But please let me know what you think in the comments. David, who controls the world's money?
Well, the same people that control the world, full stop. Because if you look at money, it's a way of dictating choice. And what is choice? Choice is freedom. The more choices you have, the more freedom you have. And if you say to most people, what would you like to do with your life? And they'll tell you, and you say, well, why aren't you doing it? They'll say overwhelmingly, because they don't have the money. So if you can control money, you control choice. And therefore, you control freedom. And given that the deletion of freedom is the whole goal of this cabal, this global cult, as I call it, then it must fundamentally control money as a matter of course. And we are moving now into a level of financial control that we've never seen before because of technology. This is why the central banks around the world are bringing in this digital currency, which is programmable. It can actually dictate what you can spend it on. And, you know, I've got a friend who wanted to buy some crypto wanted to move money from a regular bank account to buy some crypto. And they got a call from the fraud department of the bank asking them why they were buying crypto and did they know it was dangerous and dodgy and all that stuff. And, you know, that's just a stepping stone towards, well, we'll program it so you can't buy it at all or you can't buy anything you want to buy at all. So the control of money is fundamental.
So I've asked this question to a few people, and some people have said the central banks, but some people have said funds like BlackRock, Vanguard. I know that BlackRock own a large amount of the largest companies in America. Could you argue that BlackRock kind of is a bank because it controls billions of trillions of
trillions. Well, I mean, there's a little bit of background because people talk about banks and they talk about BlackRock and State Street and Vanguard and Fidelity Investments. But they're actually talking about the same organization, ultimately. The way it works is this. I've been researching this now I'm in my 35th year of doing it. There's what I call this global cult. And what that is a network of secret societies, a global network of secret societies. And these secret societies are fiercely compartmentalized, as is the global cult in totality. And thus, the great majority of people in them, the different levels of so-called degree, as they call them in Freemasonry, only have access to a certain amount of the information about the game and the goals and the whole modus operandi. But you have a few at the top of these secret societies who, or the inner core, whichever symbolism you like, and they do know the game, or at least major levels of the game. And they are basically connecting into a single web. So how it works is you've got the spider at the center of the web. There's the people you never see. And then immediately around the web, if you imagine a spider's web around the planet, and each strand in the web is a secret society, a semi-secret group, or a government agency, a bank, a BlackRock, whatever. And so the strands immediately around the spider, seriously in the hidden, they are the most exclusive secret societies. Many of them don't even have names, so it makes them harder to track. And as you come out from the spider where it's all coming from, where the global agenda is coming from, you meet the secret societies. We do know the Freemasons, the Inner Core, I mean, the Knights of Malta, the Knights Templar, the Opus Dei, and the Inner Core of the Jesuit Order, Skull and Bone Society in America and stuff like that. Reach a certain point coming out of the spider in the web, you meet what I call the cusp organizations. That's the cusp. It's where they're hidden. The secret society level meets the scene, which is the world that we live in and we see on the news. And these cusp organizations have the role of taking the agenda, the global agenda, from the hidden and playing it out in the scene. And it's at this point that you find the World Economic Forum, the Bilderberg Group, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission. The United Nations is also a cusp organization. And also, and there's another one called the Club of Rome that was started in 1968 that is specific and was from the start specifically designed to exploit concerns about the environment to justify centralized dystopia. And that's in a massive way where the whole global warming hoax and climate change hoax came from. And also in this cusp part of the web are this now enormous number of think tanks and non-governmental organizations. And once again, these organizations, these cusp organizations, are compartmentalized fiercely. And you only know what you need to know to make your contribution. So most of them also are in the dark about the big picture. And then you come out into the arena, the world that we live in, that we see, and it looks like you've got Silicon Valley and the World Health Organization and the pharmaceutical cartel and the banks and the Black Rocks and the governments and the government agencies. And on one level, that's how it works, because most of the people who work for those organizations believe they're in and of themselves. But if you go deep enough into them, to their, again, their inner core, they attach to this web. And at that point, these organizations are all the same organization. So you had during the COVID hoax, you had the World Health Organization putting out its ridiculous version of what it was claiming was going on, all of which has now been proved to be nonsense, as some of us said at the time. And at the same time, you had the Silicon Valley corporations like Facebook and YouTube and Google and all these other people they said from the start, we're going to censor anyone that challenges that World Health Organization narrative on our platforms, which is kind of crazy if you think about it. It's supposed to be an open forum. It's supposed to be a town square of opinion, but no. And it's not actually kind of bewildering once you know how this web works, because what was happening is the Silicon Valley corporations were defending the World Health Organization, both of them web operations, from being exposed for telling us lies, basically. And it reaches the point where you have the pharmaceutical cartel that was created by the Rockefeller family, overwhelmingly J.D. Rockefeller, etc., the massive cult family. And you have the government regulatory agencies that's supposed to protect the public from Big Pharma and its drugs and its vaccines and fake vaccines. But what's been happening during COVID, classic web operation, is the pharmaceutical cartel like Pfizer and Moderna. They've gone to these regulatory agencies in the different countries, the MHRA in this country, the CDC and the FDA in America, and they've asked for permission to roll out to smaller and smaller, lower and lower age groups, this fake COVID vaccine with all the mayhem in death and health destruction that has followed. And we now know, some of us knew at the time, there was no trials worth the name on these things. So the regulatory agencies, if they were protecting the public, should say, sorry, you must be having a bloody laugh. You've done no trials. But they didn't. They gave them permission. And why? Because the regulatory agencies are controlled by the web. So is the pharmaceutical cartel. And so you've got the web asking the web for permission to advance the web agenda of the COVID fake vaccine. And this is how it works. So if we then take this to the financial expression of this, you've got the banks and the major global banks. And of course, they have a massive interest and influence in finance. But then you have these multi-trillion dollar investment operations like BlackRock and Vanguard and State Street and Fidelity Investments and all of those people. And they are investing in companies, major companies all over the world. And therefore, they have massive influence on those companies. So it's not it's the banks or it's BlackRock, it's both, because they're both representing this web. Ultimately, they're in a core. So, you know, you've got major corporations, might be Coca-Cola and others, and people will say, oh, well, they must be calling their own shots. Look how big they are. But then you look at the investments. And again, you look at the investments in these major companies, and you'll see BlackRock and Vanguard over and over and over again are the top two investors in these companies. And Larry Fink, who's the CEO of BlackRock, he has said publicly that they use their financial clout, their investment clout, to influence and dictate the policy of those companies, not least in relation to climate change and transgender and so-called equity. We're supposed to, you know, people think equity means equality. It doesn't. And so all these things are the cult agenda. And these companies like BlackRock and stuff and the banks, you know, they're massively obviously influential, but these investment companies are colossal. They say, this is what we want you to do. This is what your policy will be in return for our investment. And so the number of organizations you need once you reach the scale of these to dictate policy and the direction of the world gets fewer and fewer all the time.
What is the financial agenda of this, let's call it money matrix? Is it just pure maximum profit, or is it also something else?
Well, this is the thing, you see. As I mentioned at the start, you know, money is a key to choice, and choice is a key to freedom. And, you know, I hear people that say, oh, they're only doing it for money. It's all about money. Well, these people are psychopathic and extraordinarily greedy. So on one level, they like the money. But of course, the money is a bonus. And what is money? It's a vehicle of control. So if you look at what's happened in the world, the finances of the world have been funneled and concentrated into fewer and fewer and fewer hands, where you have like basically a handful of multi-billionaires that own basically half the wealth of the world in terms of what other people have. And when you concentrate finance money to that extent, you're concentrating choice and you're denying it to those that don't have it. But where this is going or plan to go, lest we wake up fast, is that we're going to go beyond that. They want to go to a point where that they own and control the entirety of global finance. I would mention from what I said earlier, well, I remember, by the way, that the central banks of the world are working to a unified agenda. And it's unified through the Bank for International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland, which is a private organization where the central bank heads meet and decide or get told what's going to be the common agenda of those central banks. And of course, the central banks like the Federal Reserve, Bank of England, etc., have enormous impacts on national economies. So, and this is how, by the way, this digital currency agenda, the programmable digital currency, through the central banks is being coordinated through the Bank for International Settlements, through all the others. So it's like, isn't it funny? All these central banks are deciding the same thing at the same time, and they're all from different countries. Yeah, it's coordinated, mate. It's coordinated. So you're looking at a scenario, and there are three elements to it: the concentration of money, AI, and a guaranteed income for the population. And how it works is, first of all, they are going to crash the economy. This is part of the game. They're going to crash the economy on a level that you'll hear on Mars, and will make 2007, 2008 seem like, Mary Poppins at a tea party, because they want to crash the system as it is now so they can introduce their new system, which will be based on programmable digital money. And we're seeing all the stepping stones being brought in towards that now. Crashing the economy on the end of COVID and its economic devastation will destroy the job prospects of enormous numbers of people, because lots of companies have gone out of business. Because the idea is you centralize, and you hoover up until there's that handful of global corporations that run everything. See Amazon. And the AI part of it is one. AI, I've been predicting this and saying this for so bloody long, decades now, is going to take over from humans in terms of work opportunities. It's going to take them all. We're now in the situation, irony of ironies, where more and more news stories are being written by AI. So journalists are losing their jobs. You know, the journalists that kept their mouths shut, their heads down, and their minds ignorant to allow all this to go on unreported. So AI is taking, and we've seen nothing yet, enormous amounts of jobs from people. So what the idea then is to say, okay, we've got to do something for people. We've got to give them an income. They've got no income. And I'll come to that in a second. But the second part of AI is to run the system. We're seeing AI more and more and more running human life. The idea is that it takes over completely. So, for instance, with the digital currency, the idea is that they are going to introduce, and they are in some places starting to do it already, what they call 15-minute cities. And these will be communities within cities, within towns, where you can only drive out of them so many times a month, eventually, at all without permission. It won't have a car anyway, because they are getting rid of petrol and diesel cars, and there's no way in the world they're going to replace them with electric in their entirety. People are just going to be without a car because there's a war on movement as part of all this agenda. And the idea is that if you did try to drive out of your sector, then you'll pass a number plate camera. And these cameras that are being put up all over London, for instance, by this deeply sinister man, Khan, Sadiq Khan, the mayor, for this ULEZ ultra low emission zone, to take enormous amounts of money and destroy people's livelihoods in the process. Those cameras are being put up all over London, not just for ULEZ, but it's the progression towards these 15-minute cities. So you go past one of them when you shouldn't, and under the digital currency, the fine will be taken out of your bank account as you cross almost. They're doing this in China already. And the Chinese system is the blueprint for what they want to play out into the West. So the whole system will be run by artificial intelligence, which means you need very, very few people to control it, just a few at the center that control AI, and bang, you're running the entire system with a tiny few people. So as I was saying earlier, so you have this problem suddenly of all these people that have no income. And the idea is that you give them a guaranteed income. And they're starting to trial these in different places now. It's all part of the rollout. And people say, oh, well, that's all right then. We'll get a guaranteed income. That's good, yeah. That's not what it's about. First of all, it'll be a pittance. And secondly, you'll only get it if you're a good boy and girl. If you challenge the system, or you're a dissident to the system, or you have the wrong opinion on bloody Twitter, then you won't get it. That's the idea. It's all about control. And then you say, well, I don't want it. I don't want your bloody guaranteed income. And then they say, well, where else are you going to get one from? All the jobs are gone. And this is the control system that's being built all around us while people can't see it. And so people that think that they're doing all right, just like people who thought they were doing all right a few years ago and now are not, seriously not, the progression of this is that more and more people are planned to be pulled in. People that think they're doing all right and you know, they've got decent income and a nice house, they're going to be pulled into this as well as it gets more and more extreme. And there's another aspect of this, and that is that they want to control, and we'll bring BlackRock back into this, they want ownership of all the property. It's like Klaus Schwab has said at the World Economic Forum, this Bond villain guy who should be in jail, that you will own nothing but be happy. Well, the second part's not true unless they drug you. But the first part is what they want, absolutely, that you will own nothing. So how do they get people out of their houses, out of their homes? One of the ways they're going to do it, or plan to do it, is using the hoax of human-caused climate change again. They're going to be imposing so many impositions on homeowners to comply with more and more climate change demands that are going to cost more and more money, that they would simply won't be able to buy them, to afford them. And what you're seeing, and people can check this out, is happening, is people like BlackRock and these major trillion-dollar corporations and many, many banks are buying up property sight unseen, and they're then turning them into rentals. In America, they bought whole neighborhoods up in one go because they want people not to own anything. And the other thing about money is this guaranteed income is planned to have an expiry date. So when you get it, you've got to spend it, because what they don't want is people having funds and savings which give you a bit of freedom, give you a bit of choice. They don't want that. They want no one having any savings, no, and therefore no choice. And they will they're planning to make sure that you don't have savings. So we're looking, if you look around now, you're seeing it. Like I explained earlier, with these handful of billionaires that own so much, but they want to reach a situation where there's clearly two very distinct worlds. The world of the cult oligarchs that own everything and control everything, including all the resources, and the rest of the population getting round on a pittance. And I called this society I'm describing many, many years ago. I called it something else before, but I then started calling it the Hunger Games Society, because that was a blueprint in that movie series of where they want to go symbolically, where you had the elite in the Capitol, as they called it, that had all the high-tech luxury and were defended by these goons in uniform. And then they'd ward off the rest of the country into sectors. And these sectors couldn't communicate with other sectors. So there was no unity possible. This is the 15-minute cities. And if people say, oh, well, we can use the internet, that's everything. Who controls the internet? Anyone who realized they could switch it off tomorrow if they wanted. So once they've got you on a situation where you're communicating only electrically, digitally, then they control if you can communicate or not. And if you are walled off from other people to actually physically interact, Well, they're controlling who sees who and who says what to who. This is the, you know, the thing is, it's so extreme and it's so fantastic and it's so kind of or beyond Orwellian that people think, well, no, that's not possible. Well, honestly, it's happening all around you now.
So I want to come to some potential solutions in a moment, David. But I also want to ask you about the tax system. Do you think that the way we're taxed is fair and the amount that we're taxed is fair? And how does taxation fit into this money matrix agenda?
Well, taxation is theft. You know, I really hope that someone in finance with accounting skills and, you know, mathematical skills, whatever, would actually do a study on how much of your income that you get every month goes in tax. I'm not just talking about income tax and corporation tax. I'm talking about sales tax, VAT, as we call it in this country, and all the other taxes on what we buy. I mean, we've got a situation where if you buy a bloody house, a basic of life, you have to pay stamp duty in Britain to the government for no other reason than you're buying a bloody house. So if you add all that together, it would be shocking how little of your income is actually left untaxed.
And, David,
you can actually spend, you know?
Yeah, I did not a fag packet calculation. I did a fair bit of research into this. Because, you know, you mentioned about a house. You also then have council tax just once you're living in it. Fuel has double tax. Cigarettes have just gone up to 16 quid, of which is probably more than 80% tax. Alcohol and gambling are mostly. I think it's about 70%, maybe more, of what you earn and what you spend is tax.
It's unbelievable. And so what you then do is you say, okay, so where is what I get for that money? Where is it? Where is it? Services get worse and worse as the cost goes up and up. The whole system's breaking down. Where's the benefit that we get for that all that taxation? So it's not being spent on us. So where's it going? And you'll find that enormous amount of it goes out of the system and into the hands of these inner circle cultists. They are bleeding the population dry. And, it's kind of, there's some simple things that you can do to make these things happen without people actually setting out to do them. I'll tell you what I mean. So if you set a target, if you're this elite, and you set a target for net zero, that by this time, 2030, 2050, there must be a net zero of carbon dioxide production, the gas of life, by the way, without which we'd all be dead. If you set that target, you really don't have to do a lot more, because to reach that target, given the amount of fossil fuels that are used to run the system, means that you are going to transform society. It has to be transformed for you to meet that target. That's all you got to do is set the target. And another way they do it is the central government will say, you reminded me of this when you talked about local councils. The central government will say, okay, we're going to reduce the amount of money that the central government's going to give to councils. So councils look around and they say, well, we've got a shortfall. We've got to fill the shortfall. How do we do that? I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll do it, for instance, in parking fines. So you have bigger and bigger fines. You can't park anywhere. You're a minute over and there's a thing in the post. And councils then start to fleece their communities, trying to make up the shortfall. And all government said is you're not going to get as much as we gave you before, percentage-wise, whatever. And that immediately starts this, well, we've got to fleece the local community then to make up the shortfall. And so these little things are put in place because they're like dominoes. They know if you can, for instance, say, have a target of net zero, you know the dominoes are going to start to fall. Because to reach that target, a lot of things have to happen, which means society is not like it has been up to this point. And, you know, it's this web I described, this web which allows a tiny few people to actually dictate the policy, is something that people really have got to get their minds around to understand how this is all coordinated. And it's a very simple thing. People think, well, a few people can't control 8 billion, surely. Well, COVID, rest my case. But how it works is it's a very simple process of imposition and acquiescence. You said a few minutes ago about solutions. If people could just picture a pyramid image. At the top of the pyramid is the inner core of this global cult, the real inner circle. And at the bottom is the mass of the population. So how does that tiny few dictate to the lives and the direction of the lives of 8 billion people? By imposition and acquiescence. This is how it works, dead simple. And it's been going on through history. Until we break the cycle, it will go on. The inner core at the top says to the next level below it in the hierarchy, this is what you do. And this is the policy, this is what you do. And they then take that imposition, acquiesce to it, and impose it on the level below them. And very soon after you come down from that peak, you're meeting levels of the hierarchy going down towards the population that have no idea there is an inner circle or even a cult. They're just doing what their perceived superiors tell them to do. And the superiors are doing what their perceived superiors tell them to do. And so you come down the pyramid, imposition, acquiescence, imposition, acquiescence, imposition, acquiescence. And so you come down to the bottom. And if we as a population, a global population, acquiesce unquestioningly or through fear of not acquiescing to that level of the pyramid that's imposing on us, which is governments, law enforcement, and all these things, then a circuit is completed between the inner core of the cult, a handful of people, you get them in a single room, and the 8 billion people. A circuit is completed through imposition and acquiescence, in which the will of that tiny few in one room is imposed upon the entire global population. And if we need to break that cycle, and it's called non-compliance with our own enslavement, because if we go on the way we are at the moment, I mean, more and more people are waking up to this, yes, and that's great. But if it goes on as it is, it's going to reach a point, not that too long in the future. I mean, in our lifetimes, in my lifetime, I'm just coming up 72, you're going to have the point where AI starts to control everything. And at that point, it's very difficult to turn it around because you're not dealing with humans anymore. Increasingly, we're not, as we know in our daily lives. You're dealing with AI, and you can't rationally talk to AI. It's programmed to do what it does, and it will do it. And to go to the next level of all this about where this is going, it's not just about control of money to control choice. It's about controlling thought. It's about controlling perception. Perception is the stadium on which this is all played out, because if you can control someone's perception, you control their behavior. And so the control of information up to this point has been about the control of behavior. That's what the censorship is about. Censoring anything, any form of source of information that would give you perhaps a different perception than the one they want you to have. But they want to go beyond that now. And they're openly talking about it because it's getting closer. And that is the point where they connect artificial intelligence to the human brain. And at that point, artificial intelligence becomes the human mind. And this is not me, conspiracy theorists sitting in a darkened room pulling this out of the ether. This is what the people are saying, in authority now. People like Klaus Schwab are talking about the fusion of the biological with the technological. You've got people like Ray Kurzweil, this so-called futurist executive at Google, saying that by 2030, AI will be connected to the human mind, or that process will have been will be underway. And once that connection is made, AI will do more and more of human thinking until human thinking, as we know it, is basically negligible. So you're not going to think, I'm going to challenge the system. You're not going to think, hey, this is a scam. When it's not you saying it, it's what AI is telling you to think. That's what's coming. And the source, structure of this control, this AI control, is through something that Ray Kurzweil calls the cloud, an electromagnetic, technologically generated electromagnetic field, ultimately hitting every inch of the planet, to which humans will be connected, not through brain chips of the kind that Elon Musk is talking about. He's just selling the concept. Nanotechnology chips, the kind of chips that were in the fake vaccine. And the idea is that that cloud will be our connection to AI. And, you know, during COVID, you had all these businesses shut down, and only essential business was allowed, all on purpose, all to create the economic mayhem it did and take out independent business. But one of the activities that was considered essential was putting up 5G towers everywhere. And so you've got these 5G towers. I mean, on the old council estate where I used to live, where my brother still lives, there's two massive bloody 5G towers quite close to each other in the middle of this estate. But you can only, of course, go so far with towers. You can create this cloud, this electromagnetic field in a town or in a city, but not in the middle of the desert or in some, you know, outward place. So how do you do it? Well, what you do is you fire the field from low orbit satellites. And that's exactly what is going on. Elon Musk, Mr. Free Speech Absolutist, total con man, he's leading the alternative media down the garden path. It's pathetic. He's putting up, he's the leader through SpaceX. He's putting up, and on his Twitter X, he's bragging about it all the time, thousands and thousands of satellites, low orbit satellites, to beam this stuff at the planet. And Amazon is in there as well, but SpaceX is the leader. SpaceX has got permission from the Federal Communications Commission in America for 12,000 of these satellites, and there's applications in, which are starting now to come online, for another 30,000, and that won't be the end either. There's an electromagnetic brain that's being created to cover every inch of the planet to which humanity will be connected to. This is happening. And I don't care if people laugh, oh, that's too far fetched. I couldn't care less. Believe what you like. It's happening. And if you don't get your ass in gear, people, it will be completed.
So, still want to talk about solutions. I also want to talk about your role in speaking out on this. There's one thing I still want to ask before I do that. And that is, if the central banks and governments control the production of money, physical and digital, and can therefore put into the economy trillions, like they did post-March 2020, where they overtook the entire production of money ever in a few short years, yeah. Why do we need to be taxed if they can just create, they can just generate their own revenue stream?
Well, of course, we don't need to be. But if we were not taxed, think of the massively increased choice that would come from that. They don't want to give us choice. They want to take our choice away. So they want to limit the amount of money that people have. And, you know, if you're, you know, there have been people that have benefited from this system and made a lot of money that are not part of it. But where we're heading now, I say to those people, they want you as well. And they want your money as well. Because if you're not part of this, they want all of you on this basic income control system. And more than that, if this is happening in my lifetime, then what about the kids and the grandkids? What kind of world are they going to live in? So there's no need for taxation. Of course there's not. You can produce the money. But what they've been doing systematically, well, there's so many elements to this from a trade and finance point of view. What they've been doing is putting inflation into the system. What they're doing is undermining national economies and the global economy, especially in the West. The West is the target. They want to dismantle Western society. That's why the borders are wide open. So Western society can be dismantled with a massive infusion from other cultures. And the whole foundation of the way the world's moving from a geopolitical financial point of view is it's moving eastward, and it's being done on purpose. You know, when you look back at Chairman Mao and his revolution in China, Chairman Mao was a cooperative. He was put in there for a reason. The reason was that if you are paying lip service to freedom, democracy, then you can only moved in this agenda, well, before COVID, not now, at a certain pace, because people were going, hold on, what are you doing? Because it's supposed to be a free country, isn't it? So in China, they had the Mao Revolution, and they had a massive population within which they could incubate and develop a system of, not least through AI, of total human control and surveillance. And the idea was that once that had been perfected, you play it out across the world. And of course, since COVID, where this so-called virus, is supposed to have come out of, they say, the West has become more and more like China. And one other things have been happening, like the Western corporations, the cult corporations, have been outsourcing their production to China and the East. They've been giving China control over the global supply chain of very essential goods. And China is after Taiwan, says it should have Taiwan. It's his land, their land. And Taiwan is responsible for about 60% of the production of semiconductors, which are essential to the technological world that we are now in. So the control that China would have if they got hold of Taiwan is massive in and of itself. And then you have the Ukraine situation and the sanctions. I mean, Putin is all part of it as well. It's all a game. But what he said in an interview recently was true, but totally disingenuous, because he knows the reason. It's that all the Western sanctions against Russia for the invasion of Ukraine have not harmed Russia, because Russia has just done more and more trade with China and sold more and more resources and energy resources to China and other Eastern countries. The sanctions have been devastating for the West. And Putin said in this interview that he was bewildered. He was bewildered. Why would they do that? Well, you know, Vladimir, why they've done it. They've done it because the idea is to dismantle Western hegemony and power and economic power. And that's why the sanctions have backfired. They were meant to backfire. This is how it all works. And so you're now looking at the BRICS group of countries headed by China and Russia. And that is now getting bigger. And the days are numbered of the dollar being the trading currency. They want to bring in their own. They're already trading more and more in non-dollar currencies because the idea is to dismantle the West. It's extraordinary that the so-called alternative media She's basically been hijacked by right-wing politics, as was eulogizing over Putin and what he said about, oh, this is what really happened over Ukraine. But they don't realize that actually the guy they're seeing as a hero is in serious alliance with China. And the same alternative media looks to China and says, oh, yeah, they're a threat, China. Okay, well, Putin's in bed with them, mate. And you're seeing him as a hero. It's ridiculous. The idea that you have a global manipulation network, but Russia's not part of it, is ridiculous. Of course it's part of it, not the people, the government.
So, David, as I understand it, and there may be more, you've been kicked off, stroke banned from Facebook, YouTube, Spotify. Ofcom launched an investigation against you. You've had some bans in entering many European countries. Now,
29.
Andrew Tate said to me, he said, there are three stages of when they come to silence you. Number one, they cancel you and your voice. Then they imprison you. Then they assassinate you. Are you worried about stages two and three happening to you, being imprisoned or worse? And do you agree with what Andrew Tate said about that?
I couldn't care less, mate. I have a simple philosophy. I do what I believe is right, and the consequences take care of themselves. Always have, always will. I don't think there's very much that I would agree with Andrew Tate about anything, to be honest. I'd like to know what he brings to the table that's new. That would be good. I'd like to know what a lot of these mainstream alternative media people bring to the table that's new. Because I'm looking at their big audiences where they're algorithmically boosted and where they're given these big audiences, and they're now the center of the alternative media. And I listen to them and I think, well, that was in my books 10 years ago. That was in my books 20 years ago. They're not bringing anything new to the table. And there's so much new stuff that is there to be researched, because this whole conspiracy is vastly, vastly greater than it's ever been seen up to this point, vastly greater. And if we don't understand the scale of the game and how the game's really played, then we're going to lose the game.
So you're genuinely not worried in any way about your ability to speak, your safety, or anything like that? You just don't.
Well, ability to speak, a lot of that's out of my hands. If they shut the internet down, I mean, it's very difficult to communicate with people, especially when you can't go into now 29 European countries or Australia and many other countries if I try to get in them. But fear for my safety, no. Couldn't care less, mate. I mean, you know, we live forever. We're consciousness. This is just a brief experience. I'll leave the body when I leave the body. You know, que sera, sera. But I'll leave it doing what I believe to be right, not cowering in the corner, trying to extend my life a few more years by being a lapdog. I won't do it. During COVID, I went out when I wanted. I didn't social distance. I didn't do any of it. I will do the same the next time.
And what about to the people in the media that label you a conspiracy theorist? What do you think about and say to that?
I don't say anything to them. The level of moron that is recruited to be a so-called journalist these days is utterly shocking. Journalism, there used to be some journalism around where people did try to uncover the truth about various things, but we now have a media that's just a propaganda operation. And if I said to them, and I have said to them, where did conspiracy theorist and conspiracy theory come into widespread use that you're now repeating like bloody parrots? Oh, he's a conspiracy theorist. Oh, okay. So let's first of all find out where it came into widespread use. Any idea, you'd say to the journalists? No. Well, it was in the 1960s. And you can see the documents on the internet where the CIA were getting concerned that people were not buying the official story of a series of assassinations, not least the Kennedy assassination, because people were so ridiculous in their conspiracy theories that they were not believing that a bullet that clearly hit the president in the front of the head came from behind, unless they have U-turn bullets in Dallas, Texas. And there were other, well, of course, there was a series of assassinations in the 1960s, all by the same group, not least through organizations like the FBI at the time. And so they were getting concerned. They wanted to discredit them, people that were saying, hold on, this don't make sense, that don't make sense. So they sent out communications to major media organizations in America, and they urged them to use the term conspiracy theorist and conspiracy theory to discredit people that were questioning those assassinations and other events that were going on. And that's when it became into widespread use, and they just keep repeating it. So when you say something, let me just get a book here. What was it? When you say something that is different to the official story, then they say, that's a conspiracy theory. It's a conspiracy theorist. And you go, hold on a minute. Where's your evidence, they say? Well, this is one of my books. Just one. There's others of the same size. They're absolutely packed. This is about one subject alone, the 9/11. And so they don't see what you're saying and check the detail of what you're saying. They just call it conspiracy theory. And the dictionary definition of a conspiracy is two or more people conspiring together or colluding together to do something that is unpleasant or illegal, basically, to get together to create an end that is illegal or not a nice thing to do. So on that basis, the world is drowning in conspiracies. And, you know, people say to me, you seem to see conspiracies everywhere. No, I don't. I see one conspiracy, but it has massive numbers of facets. And it's the different facets I talk about, but it's the same conspiracy. And it's a conspiracy to create a global centralized dictatorship, a global dystopia, where a tiny few people at the center running a world government that wouldn't be elected, it would be appointed, technocratic government, bureaucrats and technicians and engineers, medical experts, all these sort of people, that would dictate to every man, woman, and child on the planet. And it's one conspiracy, but it has endless numbers of faces and facets.
David, is Elon Musk a net positive or a net negative for humanity?
Massive negative. Massive negative. Apart from having "I'm conning you" on his forehead, I don't know how more blatant it could be. You see, he's putting up the satellites that are making the cloud possible. So when he says that AI could be the end of humanity, as he said a few years ago, and when he says, but it's inevitable, it's not inevitable at all. Those satellites are going up because they're being given permission by the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, in America. That's why they're going up. They could make a choice not to allow them to go up, and then AI wouldn't be inevitable. AI is the tool of global control, and that's why it's being done. And you might ask this, the satellites that are being put up there, the low-orbit satellites by Musk and others, but Musk is the leader, are affecting the entire world. So how come a federal agency of the United States government can give permission to do that? And then why aren't the other countries kicking off about it? But they're not. Why? Because at that level of those countries, they're all on the same team or controlled by the same team anyway. And so, as I said earlier, the idea is to connect the human brain to the cloud. And so it's danger to humanity, AI, Musk, then starts a company, after he said that, called Neuralink, to put brain implants into people. And, you know, it means taking a piece of your skull away, and they put this thing in. That is a smokescreen. It's being done by nanotechnology. One of the great things that Musk is used for is selling concepts. So he was actually asked in an interview I saw, are people going to want to have part of their skull taken away? He said, oh, no, you might not have to do that. No, you wouldn't have to do that because you can put it in there. You can put the brain chip in there through the veins and the arteries. Nanotechnology, exactly what they've been doing with the fake COVID vaccine. And then you have the agenda of autonomous vehicle. The idea is that you use the climate change hoax, complete nonsense, to get rid of petrol and diesel cars. And there's not the money, people that can't afford electric cars, but there's not the resources for the batteries, etc., to replace all the petrol and diesel vehicles with electrics. There's not. And they say, oh, yeah, we want electric vehicles. It saves the planet. Well, that's not what it's for, actually. It's about control. So if you want an autonomous vehicle, it can't be petrol or diesel. It's got to be electric, working with a computer. So you've got to get rid of petrol and diesel vehicles if you want the autonomous vehicles, which they do. So you get in a petrol and diesel vehicle now, and you basically, unless it's a military establishment or something, you drive it where you like. With an autonomous vehicle, the computer is going to decide where you can go or not, and that because it will be programmed not to take you where the authorities don't want you to go. And it's all about control. So here's three major planks. There are others, but there's three major pillars of this agenda: the cloud, the brain chip, and autonomous cars. And he is fronting up companies that are advancing all of them. And he's... he said that he supports a carbon tax. That's straight off the cult agenda wish list, a carbon tax where to save the planet from the gas of life, you will only have to be able to buy a certain number of things in a month before you cross your carbon limit, as they say, where they say, oh, that you bought that takes so much carbon to make and all that. So you won't be able to buy anything else. And there's already a credit card, I think it's MasterCard, where they're putting carbon limits on it. And then you have him calling for a carbon tax because of global warming, which he knows is nonsense. His insider knowledge, he'll know it's nonsense. And then he's saying, and with AI, it's going to take a lot of jobs. Or what we need is a basic income. Exactly off the wish list of the cult. And he's being given a free ride by what passes for the alternative media these days. There's lots of great people out there who are genuine, but the people that get the big audiences and the focus, they're honestly, I wouldn't pay them in washers. And they're giving him a free ride because he bought Twitter, actually, with a load of these other major players in the game. And has let a few people back, although the suppression is there in another way now through shadow banning and stuff like that. And as a result, the alternative media, what I call the MAM, the mainstream alternative media, has gone into cognitive dissonance. Before, they were calling him out because of all these things that he was advancing, which were the cult agenda. Now they're quiet on it. Don't say a thing. Because, oh, no, he's a free speech absolutist. He is. He lets me write on Twitter. And so he's being given a free ride. And that's one of the reasons, just one, there are others, why he was allowed to buy Twitter. Because, you know, people say, oh, it's great now. We can go back on Twitter. And before they were controlling everything. You know, stopping people. Yeah, they were. And when Musk took it over, he released what he called these Twitter files to show, oh, look, all the control that was going on before me. So then you say to people, so the deep state, as you call it, which is just an expression of the cult, had control of Twitter and who could be on it and what they could say. Oh, yeah, absolutely they did, yeah. So that's what they want in it. They want that control. Oh, yeah, they want that control, yeah. So why did they sell it to Musk then? Why would they do that? Why would BlackRock and State Street and Fidelity Investments and JP Morgan, etc., why would they let him have it? Because there's an ulterior motive. And if you notice the and you know, I've done a lot of research on this, and others are starting to do a lot of research on it as well. These tech oligarchs, these multi billionaire tech oligarchs, not least people like Peter Thiel, are moving in, Musk's old mate, are moving in on the alternative media. They're funding it. They're putting their people in there to give the right message. And they are seeking to dilute opposition to what they want, this AI control agenda, by hijacking the opposition. So if you look at this scenario, suddenly I noticed, because those posts of Musk on Twitter X, they're every single one is strategic. It's not by accident. It's not just the odd comment. They are calculated. So I noticed in the last few weeks that suddenly Elon Musk is posting about the dangers of what's happening on the United States southern border. He hadn't before, but now he suddenly is many times. That the border's open and people are coming in and we've got to stop it. Now, that is a point of concern of the alternative media and has been for years and years and years. I've been writing about it and warning about it and what the plan was for decades. So what's happened is people have gone, oh, Elon's seen it now. Elon's great. Look, he's pointing out the border. So where's this going? Well, where it's going is a virtual border, a border controlled by AI. And there's companies, not least connected to Peter Thiel, that are involved in this now. It's starting to play out. That's the solution to the problem that they've calculatedly created. And so you've had an alternative media and alternative thinkers, pushbackers, I call them, that can see some of this AI stuff and don't want it to happen. And normally would say, no, we don't want AI borders and biometric borders and all that stuff and biometric airports. Oh, no, they're pushing back against it. So now what you do is you create a problem, which is an open border, the southern border, and what's happening in Europe as well. And then you offer a solution, which is what the pushbackers have been pushing back against. But well, these people are on our side. It's Elon. He's saying what's happening on the border is all dangerous and horrible and terrible and threatening. And he's got a solution. And Thiel's got a solution. And this guy's got a solution. And they're all the same solution, which is a digital biometric border. And if you notice, the European Union at the very same time are bringing in biometrics more and more and more in airports and at border control points. And it's all part of this unfolding AI control of everything. So Elon Musk, I wouldn't trust him to tell me the time in a room full of clocks, frankly. And I've said many times, debate me, Elon, live. I'd love it. Bring as many others as you want. I'd love it. Because you haven't got a leg to stand on, and you know it if the truth is brought out about what you're really doing.
So, David, we've talked here about what you call the cult or the cabal, and you mentioned earlier that the people who control the world are at the top of the pyramid, you could get them all in a room. And I think you also said recently aliens are on Earth and are controlling it. So what did you mean by that? And are you saying that these people who control the world are not human?
The people that can ultimately control the world are not human. No, I've been saying that since 1996. And funnily enough, with all the ridicule you get, ridicule from people that don't even bother to read what you're saying and the detail of it, a lot of them are now starting to go, hold on a minute. When I do look at this, it's an anti-human agenda. I mean, you know, one of the agendas that's going on quite demonstrably is they're targeting farmers and the production of food. That's an anti-human agenda, because the whole point of targeting food, targeting water, targeting energy access is a simple equation. what you are dependent upon controls you. And if you have abundance, then you don't have dependence. If you have scarcity, you have dependence, thus control. And so the idea is to massively reduce the amount of food being produced in the world. And it's happening. I mean, in the Netherlands, they are compulsory purchasing the land of 3,000 Dutch farmers in the second biggest exporter of food country by value in the world. Now, that's massively so. And you've seen all these farmer protests all over Europe as a result of it in many countries now, including Germany. So it's an anti-human agenda. And I could go on and on about the other anti-human parts of it. But so it's less and less of a stretch for people to think that an anti-human agenda could be orchestrated by a non-human force. And, you know, people are, you know, they think about extraterrestrials or whatever. They think about, you know, people in spaceships and what have you. I'm not talking about extraterrestrial in the sense of in the world that we live in. I'm talking about other dimensional non-human forces that operate out of a dimension that's very, very close to this one and kind of fuses into it. Called the astral in esoteric terms. And that's where this is really being orchestrated from. And I've done a series of books. One's called The Trap, one's called The Dream, the latest one. And I'm just closing in on finishing the third in the trilogy, which kind of describes the totality of this manipulation of humanity. And it starts with the cult operating in our reality, which is just a band of frequency and ridiculously small, goes into this astral dimension through it with a non-human force, with all the detail, not pulling out the ether, and also about how the fact that this very reality that we're experiencing is a simulation. I was saying just after the turn of the millennium, that this is a simulation, and the limit of the simulation at this level, there's other levels of it, the astral is part of it. The limit at this level is the speed of light. And it was April 2021, all those years later, that an article appeared in Scientific American, a mainstream science magazine in America, where an academic was saying that he believed that actually we are in a simulation, and the limit of the simulation is the speed of light, which he related to the processing speed of the simulation. And since I've been talking about this in the early part of the 2000s, more and more mainstream scientists have come out and said, actually, it does look like we're in a simulation. There was one just across the water from me on the Isle of Wight in Portsmouth. It was in all the papers in December, where he says that it is a simulation. It does look like we're in a simulation, and he thinks he can prove it. I've bought his book, which is very, very thin, interesting, but very, very thin, and mine are about that big, you know, describing the details of the simulation. It's there to be seen if people only open their minds. And so if you are these, this non-human force is the behind the simulation. So if you think that if you go on the internet, and you go onto YouTube or something, if you have to, and put in words to get you a compilation videos of people wearing virtual reality headsets, and just look at how they respond. They're in a room. They may be in an empty room. They may be with one or two other people, and they put the headset on. And within seconds, they are responding to the headset reality. They're in a room with other people or on their own. It's just a game, but not to their perception. It's not. It's real. They're screaming. They're jumping around. They're falling over. Because in those few seconds and minutes, what is being fed to their mind through the headset has completely hijacked their sense of reality. And imagine if you have a whole lifetime, a human lifetime, effectively in headset reality, and everyone's in the same headset reality and confirming to you that the headset reality is real, well, you're going to believe it's real, but it's not. It's a simulation. The whole thing's simulated. And there's more and more scientific evidence to show that that's the case. So it's a massive picture.
So, David, I'd like to let everyone perhaps consider going and reading some of your books on that, because if I ask about what a simulation is, we're going to be here a long time in our simulation. So my final question to you, David, is why do you do this? Why do you write so many books that are so deeply researched? Why do you speak out so much on this and, you know, put your own liberty at risk? What is your mission?
Well, once you start to find out what's going on, I find it almost impossible to comprehend why anyone would walk away from it. I started out in 1990. I started to understand that the world was not controlled by the people we thought it was, like presidents and prime ministers. It then went in 1996 into the non-human aspect of it, what was behind this cult, then into the simulation and so on. And it's even deeper now with these new books. And how do you walk away when you realize what's going on? You see kids and grandkids walking around, my own and others, and you think, what the hell world are you going to live in if this reaches its fruition? Then I don't see how anyone can walk away and just quietly get on with their life knowing that that's coming. So, you know, as I say, in this, I'm in the 35th year of it now. And I had seen so many people come and go. They've come, they've been flavor of the month for a few months, maybe a year or two, and then they've disappeared. And they say, oh, no, I can't keep going. You know, people are having a go at me and attacking me. And I think, well, you know, grow a bloody pair, mate. You know, this is, who said this was going to be easy? But they come and they go. And I don't know how they can go when you can see what's coming. And, you know, since the early days when I was just subject to constant ridicule, I say early days through the 90s into the 2000s and so on, but not anything like now, you know, you had that ridicule and you live with it and the abuse. But what was the alternative? Walking away and trying to shut your mind off when actually, because you know what's going on, you turn on the news and you're seeing the next stage. All right, you know, I'm just going for a walk. I don't want to know. I can't do that. I have to do everything I can while I'm here to alert people to what's happening. And because if this is not exposed and this is not responded to, then what these people want will happen. And the thought of that is horrific, given the scale of what they want to happen. I mean, we're not talking about psychopaths. We're talking about super psychopaths. You know, we're talking about people who, if you called them evil, evil might sue for defamation of character. This is the scale of the depth of the darkness that we're dealing with. But, you know, there's billions of us and there's a few of them. And if we don't know what's going on, then the few will get their way. And so I'll go on to the minute I leave this simulation, still trying to alert as many people as I can to what's happening. It's just it's the way I'm wired. I can't do anything else now, after doing it for so long.
So, David, where can we find you, follow you, where you're still up and running? Where can we get your books and your work and, you know, wherever you're going to be campaigning or helping?
They can get my books at davidike.com. There's a voids Amazon, davidike.com. You know, there's a stream of them still turning them out. It's getting deeper and deeper in the rabbit hole. But there's one I would recommend that really encompasses the whole thing. It's called Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told. And then the latest ones are The Trap, The Dream, and one that I'm, you know, well on the way to finishing now. It will be out this year. I'll be doing some public talks around Britain in the autumn, about, you know, 10 different cities. So that's where I'm doing what I'm doing, and then responding to whatever happens. and davidicke.com every day as the news stories in context, and my videos are all up there as well. And then there's the Iconic platform, which is our media platform. It was started by my son in 2019, and or was it 2018? Not very long ago, anyway. And it's been fantastically successful. And we have a simple motto: question everything. And we do not have a limit on where we will go if the evidence takes us there. The evidence is our guide, not preconceived idea, and certainly not what will people think if we say this. So it's a bastion of the alternative media that is truly alternative.
And what's the URL for that? Iconic?
Iconic.com.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do a show every week called The Dot Connector. There's loads of great shows on there, and also full-length documentaries and films. There's a great series on there called Classified with Richard Willett that goes, you know, deep in the rabbit hole. It's a really great great platform. Delighted with it.
David, thank you very much for giving me your time and being on the show.
No problem. All the best.
It saddens me that people don't have a free voice or speech anymore. Whether you agree or disagree with all or parts of what David Icke said, we should all have the freedom to express our opinion. And for that reason, it's vital you leave a comment and share yours.